It's Wednesday, August 14th. I'm Priyanka Arabindi.
And I'm Juanita Tolliver, and this is What a Day, the show where we bring you all of today's news in a way that's very demure, very mindful, very approachable.
Very. Are we spending too much time on TikTok? I don't know. You be the judge.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You go on for 2 seconds, you will know what we're talking about. And if you don't, I'm sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Maybe good for you, but no. This one is fun.
On today's show, citizens in 2 more states will have a choice to vote for reproductive rights in November. Plus, Governor Tim Walz defends his military record at his first solo rally.
But first, the impact of a recent Supreme Court ruling on homelessness is being felt throughout the West Coast. Late last week, California Governor Gavin Newsom told reporters that he will withhold funds from local governments that don't comply with his order to clear homeless encampments.
State of California is doing more than ever. We'll continue to do more. But this will be my final words on this. If we don't see demonstrable results, I'll start to redirect money. I'm not interested in status quo ante any longer.
Newsom issued his order last month after the Supreme Court ruling in Grants Pass v. Johnson made it easier for local governments to criminalize homelessness. Last week, the city council in Grants Pass, Oregon, the city at the center of the court's decision, passed a new ordinance that will fine people for sleeping outside and could lead to jail time. We reached back out to Jeremiah Hayden, a reporter for Street Roots, who's been reporting on homelessness in Grants Pass, and here is what he said has been happening to unhoused people in the city.
I spoke with a few people in Grants Pass who told me nothing has really changed a whole lot since council passed the ordinance last week. That's not to say anything is great. People are still being moved once a week. There are no fully operational overnight shelters, and the public is still quite angry. Helen Cruz told me that the water is still shut off in parks and the restrooms have been closed. She's a formerly and intermittently homeless resident in Grants Pass who goes out and delivers water to people. But a few weeks ago, temperatures reached 113 degrees and there was no water available for people in the parks. One of the ongoing fears here is this park watch group who enters the parks to harass people sleeping there. This is a common thing that happens with these groups who just want to see people out of the parks.
I think this is a truly heartbreaking and preventable reality that unhoused people are experiencing right now. And these policies seem to lack humanity or authentic solutions that will help them get into safe, consistent housing.
Right, absolutely.
Back in California, local leaders are divided over the right approach to homelessness. San Francisco Mayor London Breed has been ordering sweeps of encampments this month, despite the fact that recent data showed the number of unhoused people in San Francisco was far greater than the number of beds available in the city's shelters.
Meanwhile, Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass has voiced her concerns over Newsom's order, saying that officials need to focus on housing and services before sending in law enforcement. For more on how the Grants Pass ruling is playing out all across California, I called up Sydney Johnson. She is a reporter for KQED who's been covering homelessness in San Francisco. She told us that the city is conducting at least 2 encampment sweeps a day, every day. I started by asking her what Mayor Breed's homelessness policy looked like before the Grants Pass ruling and how it's changed ever since.
Going back before the Grants Pass ruling, San Francisco was going through a lawsuit where a group called the Coalition on Homelessness actually sued the city of San Francisco for not following its own policies related to how it clears homeless encampments. So San Francisco had policies on the books, still does, that say when the city forces a group of people or a person sleeping in a tent on the sidewalk to move, they have to do a couple of things. One, they had to offer shelter. They had to offer some other place to go. And in addition to that, the crews of workers, which include street cleaners, but also police and outreach workers, it's a whole group of folks that go out in these scenes. They're also required to what's called bag and tag people's items before tossing them away. The idea was essentially to give folks who maybe are sleeping or maybe walked away from their things, perhaps to go to work, perhaps just to walk around the corner, to give them a chance to actually go back and retrieve their items right, rather than having them just thrown out in a truck. And this is really important. You know, I think a lot of times people say, why does that matter? You know, stuff is just getting thrown away. It's garbage. We're talking wheelchairs, we're talking right, medications, we're talking family heirlooms.
Yeah, anything.
You know, this is really important stuff for some folks. So those were 2 policies that San Francisco had. And the city was facing this lawsuit essentially saying, hey, San Francisco, you haven't been following these policies. And then the city was under a court order to essentially follow those policies that are on the books. And that was happening up until the Grants Pass ruling. And so the ruling in Grants Pass was very much related to this because Grants Pass was obviously about whether or not you can require someone who's unhoused to move without having an alternative shelter available. So San Francisco was essentially being held to its own policies when it really couldn't fulfill some of those because the city doesn't have enough shelter beds. It doesn't have enough permanent supportive housing units to move people into from off of the streets. So now that the Grants Pass ruling has come down, San Francisco and other West Coast cities have a lot more flexibility to carry out these encampment clearings, even though there is not alternative shelter available all the time.
Right. I want to follow up on something you mentioned in that answer. City officials say that the sweeps are meant to move unhoused people into temporary housing, but local advocates say that the city doesn't have the resources to ensure that. What do the numbers look like there in terms of like what is needed in terms of housing versus what they actually have?
The point in time count, which is the federal survey of the number of people who are experiencing homelessness, this is a national survey that every city has to do, found that there are several thousand people living on the streets in San Francisco any given night. What we know is that the shelters in the city are at 90% capacity. I just checked the waitlist online right before this call, and there were nearly 200 people on the waitlist. Wow. Those are just people who have the resources and know how to sign up also.
Yeah.
You know, that's just one way of looking at it. That's just talking about shelter. If we're going to talk about permanent supportive housing, the city still does not have enough units to meet the demand there either.
If there isn't housing available, what options does an unhoused person have once their camp has been cleared in San Francisco? I know Mayor Breed has introduced an executive order that directs city workers to buy bus tickets for unhoused people to send them to other cities. What does this look like for them?
I monitored one of these sweeps last Friday and spoke to folks who were forced to move in the morning. And basically what happened was, so it was a Friday morning. I got there around 7:30 a.m. and crews typically arrive around 8. The folks who were living in this particular alley had received a notice on Monday morning that crews would be coming, so they did have a heads up. By the time the crews actually got there and theoretically would be able to potentially offer shelter if there was any available, all but one person had left the area. So there was about 8 people who were living there the night before, and most of them left because they knew that the offers weren't something that they wanted to say yes to.
Right.
2 people that I spoke to said that they actually had encountered these crews multiple times in the last month and that they had accepted shelter. They stayed in a shelter for over a week at one point. One of the women said she experienced sexual harassment in the shelter and she didn't feel comfortable going back there. And so her partner and her just said, we're avoiding it now. There was a woman who was on her own with a dog, and she said that she did accept a shelter option that day. She said she just wanted a quiet place to go, figure out her next moves. But when I asked her what those next moves were, she didn't know. She had been living in the South of Market neighborhood on and off the streets for the last 5 years, and having someone come by and tell her to move and give her a short shelter stay wasn't answering that longer term question of how do I actually have a long term stable housing. It is possible that housing slots will be available at the right time, but it's just so rare that that all lines up when it should and when it's needed.
How have other mayors in California kind of reacted to Governor Newsom's order to clear the encampments so far? You know, can we expect to see more of these kinds of sweeps throughout the state?
I think so. There were certainly other mayors and certainly other Democratic mayors that celebrated this Supreme Court decision alongside Breed, which it should be pointed out, too, that this was a conservative majority Supreme Court ruling. So, you know, the contrast of these deep blue mayors celebrating that win is really striking. I do think we'll see it in other cities, you know, perhaps Sacramento or Stockton or San Diego. a notable city that's bucking the trend with this, at least in terms of how government officials are responding, is actually happening in LA. Mayor Karen Bass has kind of taken the opposite approach of Breed in terms of her response to this. She said that the city is not planning to arrest people who are experiencing homelessness, while Breed has said, we're going to ramp up citations. We have evidence to see that that is happening. Breed has also said that arrests are possible. And we've heard from attorneys representing people in jail for this right now that that has happened as well. So it's very likely, I think, that we'll see more of these sweeps across the West Coast, especially in cities that are like San Francisco. Maybe this has become a politicized thing and it's an election year, but we won't see it everywhere. And like, I think it'll be really interesting to pay attention to those other cities and what they are doing. Are rates of homelessness actually going up and down differently in different cities? You know, this is such a huge sprawling issue and no individual city is going to solve it on their own, I don't think.
Right.
But if there's different approaches that are being taken, I think we'll really have to watch and see what happens on the local level.
That was my conversation with KQED reporter Sydney Johnson, who's been covering homelessness in San Francisco.
That's the latest for now. We'll get to some headlines in a moment. But if you like our show, make sure to subscribe and share with your friends. We'll be back after some ads. Let's wrap up with some headlines.
Headlines.
It is official. Arizona voters will get a chance to enshrine abortion rights in their state constitution this November. The Arizona Secretary of State's office on Monday said it had certified nearly 580,000 signatures turned in by the coalition Arizona for Abortion Access. That's way more than what was needed to qualify for the ballot. Arizona currently bans most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. It's also a major swing state Democrats hope to win in November, and the measure could help boost election turnout. Abortion rights advocates in Missouri won a similar victory on Tuesday. Voters there will get a chance to reverse the state's near total ban on abortions this November and guarantee protections in their state constitution. Both Missouri and Arizona's abortion laws went into effect after the Supreme Court overturned the federal right to an abortion in 2022. And just like we saw in the elections in 2022 and 2023, abortion rights are absolutely going to be a winning, mobilizing issue for Democrats.
Absolutely. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz held his first solo rally since being named Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate. On Tuesday, Walz spoke in Los Angeles at a convention from one of the country's largest labor unions, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. During his speech, Walz talked about the Harris ticket's support for unions. He also defended his military service, something the Trump campaign has spent the last week trying to discredit.
I am damn proud of my service to this country. And I firmly believe you should never denigrate another person's service record. To anyone brave enough to put on that uniform for our great country, including my opponent, I just have a few simple words. Thank you for your service and sacrifice.
Walz spent more than two decades serving in the Minnesota National Guard before retiring in spring 2005 to run for Congress. A few months after his retirement, his unit was told it would deploy to the war in Iraq. Walz's Republican counterpart, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, who is also a veteran, has accused Walz of misrepresenting his service and retiring to avoid deployment. Walz and the Harris campaign strongly refute this claim.
As the daughter and granddaughter of people who served in the U.S. military, every person's military service is valuable and worthy. Like, it's really disgusting, these attacks from J.D. Vance.
Absolutely. Especially when you're standing next to Mr. Bones Burrs over there. Like, what are you doing?
Do you know who you're running with?
Like, come on, come on.
Iran is continuing to signal its plans to launch a retaliatory strike against Israel for the assassination of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh. Haniyeh was killed late last month in Tehran. On Monday, the U.S. and several allies released a statement calling on Iran to, quote, stand down its ongoing threats of a military attack against Israel. Then, on Tuesday, a spokesman for Iran's Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a response, saying that the demand made by the Western powers, quote, lacks political logic and contradicts principles of international law. Also on Tuesday, Three senior Iranian officials told Reuters that if a ceasefire deal is reached between Hamas and Israel, Iran would hold off on retaliating. Ceasefire talks are supposed to resume on Thursday, but a Hamas official told Reuters the militant group will not be sending a representative to this week's talks, and instead want to see a plan that will put President Biden's ceasefire proposal from May into practice.
The DNC is getting with the times and coming to TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube with a more modern look. On Tuesday, the Democratic National Convention Committee announced that for the first time ever, the DNC will be streaming vertically on the social media platforms. Okay. Very modern, very hip for the DNC. People have been doing this for a while, but okay.
I mean, a win is a win. A win is a win, okay?
A win is a win. All right. Convention organizers hope to reach younger viewers by offering the vertical view that users are used to on the popular apps. The convention will also be streaming on Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, and Roku. And for the boomers out there, you can still catch it on Facebook. What are you doing there? No. Cesspool.
I mean, they're looking for horizontal views, right? I feel like Facebook is set up for horizontal while everybody else is vertical. But also, I'm excited about this. I really hope they do some type of collaboration with our homemate, Very Demure.
Very, oh my God. Did you see how Vice President Harris came to this stage? Very demure, very mindful. And those are the headlines.
One more thing before we go. It's election season, which also means it's lawn sign season. Get into the action with the newest housing-focused drop from the Cricut store. Now you can be the most progressive house on the block with signs that say YIMBY, that's yes in my backyard. Ones that say, in this house, we believe this house is too expensive. And while you're at it, grab a dictatorship bad 2024 sign too. There's also a flag. Someone make sure to tell Martha and Alito. Housing is an issue that feels big and hard to tackle, but change starts on the neighborhood level. Make it clear that you want more affordable housing for all and get a conversation going on your home turf. Head to Cricut.com/store to shop the collection.
That is all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, protect Tim Walz at all costs, and tell your friends to listen.
And if you're into reading and not just the massive number of Arizonans who signed the Abortion Access Ballot Initiative like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at Cricut.com/subscribe. I'm Juanita Tolliver.
I'm Priyanka Arabindi.
And the DNC says hot to go to the polls. I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Oh my God. Juanita, Chapel Roan, please.
I just know she dressed up like a WWF wrestler.
Is that what that costume was?
Yeah!
Oh.
What It Is, a production of Cricut Media. It's recorded and mixed by Bill Lance. Our associate producer is Raven Yamamoto. We have production help today from Michelle Aloy, Tyler Hill, Greg Walters, and Julia Clear. Our showrunner is Erica Morrison, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka.